So it's time to start the session. So please take your seat and take off. Okay. Good morning, folks. Welcome. Welcome to this session about authentication and authorization infrastructure in Microsoft SharePoint 2013. I'm Paolo Pialorsi. Here you can find my email address, just in case of need. Drop me an email, and I will be glad to give you an answer if I have one, of course. Let me introduce myself briefly before moving to the real content of this session. I'm a consultant, a project manager, and a trainer. I work in a company of my own, and during my career, I achieved about 40 Microsoft certifications, including the Certified Solution Master Charter SharePoint. I'm focused on SharePoint since the early years, and in my life, when I had time during the night, I wrote some books about .NET, Link, C#, and SharePoint, of course. My latest book is the SharePoint 2013 Developer Reference for Microsoft Press, and I have also some copies to give away at the end of the session to the people who will ask me easy-to-answer questions. Okay. And, of course, sometimes it happens that I am a speaker in conferences, only one time, and then they stop calling me. Okay, so let's move to the real contents of this session. We will talk about authentication and authorization in SharePoint 2013. That means we will focus our attention on users authentication, federation with external identity providers, app authentication, and custom claim provider in order to enrich the experience of our end users while using external identity providers. Moreover, we will move to the authorization part of the story, and we will see how users authorization works, as well as how the app authorization works in SharePoint 2013. And we will end up talking a little bit about the server-to-server or iTrust scenario. So it will be a session, I think, full of content. So if you will have any kind of question to ask, please keep it for the end of the session, because I will try to give you all the content on time, let me say. So let's start talking about the authentication story. In SharePoint 2013, the user's authentication can be seen almost like it was in SharePoint 2010. In fact, we have the old style classic mode authentication, which is now deprecated. Be careful. I will talk about this later again. But through the classic mode, you can authenticate Windows identities. And as soon as you will have authenticated an end user using the Windows identity through classic mode, you will have, from the SharePoint perspective, an SP user object. On the other side, we have the claims authentication mode, which allows us to authenticate against Windows identities, but also form-based authentication users through a SQL Server database or an LDAP provider or any membership provider compliant engine we could have under the cover. And regardless, you will authenticate your users using Windows Identity or FBA. Under the cover, SharePoint will translate their identities into claim-based identities and, at the end, into SP user objects as well. Moreover, we also have the capability to authenticate users through SAML 1.1 tokens. SAML stands for Security Assertion Markup Language and allows us to authenticate users using external Active Directory Federation services or Windows Azure Access Control services or any other identity provider compliant with WS Federation, Passive Requestor, and SAML 1.1 tokens. And again, when we use SAML 1.1, we end up having claim-based identities and SP users from a SharePoint perspective. So, the classic mode, as I told you, is a deprecated authentication mode. You shouldn't use it right now. It's there just for backward compatibility. It is not available when you create a new web application through the central administration. You can only use it through PowerShell just because you could have the need to create a web application in order to migrate some content from the old versions of SharePoint. But as soon as you will have created and migrated the content into SharePoint 2013, you should use the Convert SP Web Application CMDLet to convert your web application from the classic mode to the claims mode, okay? On the other side, the claims-based mode is the future of SharePoint authentication. It's the default mode, the only one you have in the SharePoint Central Administration, and of course in PowerShell as well. And you should use it. Please use it. Move to it. I will try during this session to make you aware of the reasons why you should move to the claim-based authentication. Okay? It's my goal for this session. And the claim-based authentication allows us to authenticate anonymous users, because even if I know that someone is anonymous, it's a kind of authentication, of course. The Windows authentication can be basic, NTLM, or Kerberos. The form-based, and again, can be a membership API provider or an LDAP provider or any custom provider you can create using .NET code. And the trusted identity provider, which we will see in a few minutes, and which can be an Active Directory Federation Services or any external identity provider. Any means also any custom developed identity provider, even if it's not so easy, and probably it is better to use Active Directory Federation Services or Windows Azure ACS in place of a custom software implementation. So let me show you the available options from the user's perspective as well as from the administrator perspective. So I will move to my demo machine. Hope this is the right button. Yes, it is. Okay. Here I have the central administration of a demo farm that I have in my environment. Under the web applications page, I have a claims demo portal, which under the authentication provider configuration allows me to enable anonymous access so that I can support anonymous authentication. But I also have configured Windows authentication using NTLM, form-based authentication using a standard out-of-the-box membership provider for SQL Server database, the one provided by ASP.NET, and a role provider as well for managing roles of my users. And I also have a couple of trusted identity providers. One is a custom-developed identity provider, but could also be an ADFS server. And the other one will be based on Windows Azure Access Control Services. And later, we will see how to support this kind of external identity provider. So far, let me show you the user experience. When you have a web application like the one I have just shown you, the end users will be able to authenticate, to access it anonymously, as you can see, but also to authenticate clicking on the sign in button on the upper right corner. And they will be prompted with a authentication selector page, which will allow them to choose the best authentication technique or the only authentication technique they can support, they can provide us. So they can authenticate using Windows, Form, and so on. Of course, this page can be customized. It's not the topic of this session, but you can customize this page. And you can route the users to the right authentication technique based on their profile or based on from where they are coming. Now, let me authenticate using Windows authentication. I will provide a set of credentials stored in my local domain, the one of the administrator this time. And as you can see, I will be authenticated as a Windows user, but let me zoom on the content of this page. Here I have a custom web part that allows me to inspect the current user. Well, it is the administrator, we know. It has a kind of strange login name. I will explain you what's under the cover of this strange string format. It has been authenticated through a federation authentication type, and under the cover, the object representing the user is a claims identity and a claims principal. So we have claims inside this identity and principal. And in fact, this is the list of claims describing our user identity. And as you can see, we have the name identifier with the username. We have, for instance, the user principal name and many other claims. And let me show you also that we have a strange claim called Fidelity Program Level, which I have injected inside my identity through a custom claim provider that I will show you later how it's built on. Moreover, I have a list of group security IDs which represent the groups to which my user belongs, my Windows user belongs. Now, let me sign out. Let me close the browser to forget any cookie, and let me open it again. Sign in, form-based authentication now. a different way for authenticating the user, username and password form. I will provide my username, sampleadmin01, the password. Hope it's the right one. Yes, it is. Now I'm another user, authenticated using form-based authentication. But if I go on this web part, I'm still an authenticated user, with another username, of course, still authenticated through Federation, and still with a claims identity and claim principle under the cover. And again, we have a login name with a strange format, slightly different than before, but still a little bit strange, at first sight at least. And with a list of claims again, with the user principal name somewhere, and the fidelity program level again. OK. Let's go on playing. I have also a custom identity provider I have implemented using Visual Studio. I will not show you the code, don't worry, OK? But I will give you, in the demo, zip file of the session. So if you want to go deeper on this, you can. But as I told you, probably the best solution for you is to leverage Active Directory Federation services instead of a custom developed solution. But I will start this one just to show you that we can use any external identity provider compliant with WS Federation. In this case, my custom identity provider answers under the following endpoint, HTTPS localhost 44334. Now, let's go to SharePoint, sign in using that identity provider. And as you can see now, the URL is the one of my external identity provider. I have to authenticate using a set of credentials that are specific to this identity provider. And I will be able to authenticate against SharePoint using a different authentication technique, but still having a login name, one more time different than the previous two, federated authentication, claim identity, and claim principle, and again, the fidelity program level. Lastly, let me show you that we can also authenticate our users using external authentication engines like Microsoft account, Facebook, Google account, or whatever else. Whatever else is compliant with Windows Azure Access Control Services, or more in general, with WS Federation. So this time, I will sign in using the ACS identity provider. And here, I'm redirected to an external identity provider under accesscontrol.windows.net, which is hosted on Windows Azure. And I can authenticate providing a Microsoft account, what was known also as Windows Live ID in the past, or Facebook. I will choose Facebook. And I will log in from my Facebook account. This is my real account, so if you want to be my friend, you can do that. I will be glad, okay? In particular for girls and ladies, okay? Okay. I'm a geek. I've logged in, and now I am a Facebook user, but from a SharePoint perspective. And one more time, and the last, don't worry, the last time. I still have a login name, another kind of login name, through Federation authentication, which is a claim-based identity and the claims principle, and again, with the fidelity program level. So, as you have just seen, we can authenticate our user with different flavors. But under the cover, every single time I choose a different flavor, I have a different login name available. So, let me go back to the slide deck to word a little bit about this topic. Those strange string formats, at first sight, could be really strange, but have a great meaning under the cover. So I want to explain to you what is under the cover of this string format. First of all, let me take this fake claim as an example. The first character describes if this is an identity claim with an HR or a claim, any other claim which is not an identity claim with a C char. Then we have a separator and a reserve character reserved by Microsoft, of course. Moreover, we have another character which can be any of the values defined for any of the available claim type, any of the registered claim types registered in SharePoint. So those are just a few examples, but you have a lot of claim type encoding in SharePoint. And you can also retrieve the whole list using the get SP claim type encoding CMDLET. And you can also register your own using the new SP claim type encoding CMDLET. For instance, in this example, I have a 5, which means an email claim, OK? Then we have the claim value type. That could be a string, a point, like is this one, or an RFC 822 name with a plus character. Then we have the claim issuer. Those are some of the most useful claim issuer, like the Windows one, the trusted identity provider, the form authentication, or a custom claim provider, which we will use later. And we have a separator. In case of a Windows issued claim, so a claim issued by a Windows issuer, we will have the claim value directly after the separator, and no more information. Otherwise, if we have a claim issued by any other issuer, any other than Windows, we will have the name of the original issuer of the claim, followed by a separator and the real value. Okay? So that strange string has a great meaning under the cover. Now you know. Now, you can find more details on this link that you will find on the slide deck, of course. Let's move to the trusting of an external identity provider. I showed you that I can authenticate my users using an external identity provider of my own or Windows Azure ACS. Well, now I will show you how, by hand, do that in your own environment, trusting Windows Azure ACS. So first of all, let me introduce Windows Azure ACS, because maybe you don't know what is it. And it's OK if you don't know it. You are here just for this purpose. So Windows Azure ACS 2.0, the last version we have, is an identity provider and a security token service. That means a service that can provide security tokens, digital identities based on claims. Well, Windows Azure ACS can support external identity providers in order to authenticate end users, like Microsoft account, Facebook, as you saw, but also Google, Yahoo, ADFS 2 or 3, Windows Azure Active Directory, or any other custom AWS Federation compliant identity provider. So it's really powerful. But the key feature of Windows Azure ACS is the pricing model, because it's free. Okay? So you don't have to pay for it. It's free. You simply need to have a Windows Azure subscription, and you can create as much ACS namespaces as you want. It's free. And it's great, of course. Some of the specs supported by ACS 2.0 are OAuth 2.0, which is used by Office 365 as well. This afternoon, after lunch, I will have a session about federating apps using OAuth as well, and we will use ACS. It supports AWS Trust and AWS Federation, and it can provide SAML 1.1 or 2.0 tokens, as well as JSON Web tokens. So it's a really open service. Let me show you how you can leverage this service in your own SharePoint farm to support Facebook, Google, or whatever else. So back to my demo environment. OK, can you see it? Now, first of all, I need to go to Windows Azure. So let me close my browser session, and let me open Windows Azure. Oh, I need to sign out, of course. So www.windowsazure.com. I have to go to the management portal of Windows Azure, and I will have to authenticate using a Microsoft account on an organizational account. I will use my Microsoft account, which is this one. I will have to provide my password, of course. Oh, the right one works better. OK, and in a few seconds, we will have the management UI, the web-based management UI of Windows Azure, where we can find, in the Active Directory section, which is in the lower part of the UI, here it is, we have an Access Control Namespaces tab, where we can create as many instances as we like of Access Control service, simply providing a name, a unique name, which has to be unique, so not used by someone else before us. I have already created a namespace in my environment, so I will use it. And by clicking on it and clicking on the Manage button, you will be redirected to a different UI, a little bit more old style, but it's the UI to manage access control service. From an identity provider viewpoint, and so not only from ACS, but from any identity provider viewpoint, usually we have the idea of identity providers, relaying parties, and rules to manage tokens inside the security token service. So also in ACS, we have the capability to define, first of all, which are the identity provider that we want to use to authenticate our end users. In my scenario, I have Facebook and Windows Live ID, which is Microsoft account now. By default, when you create a new ACS namespace, you already have a Microsoft account identity provider pre-configured for you. And you cannot change it, you cannot remove it, okay? You have it. You can hide it from the user, but why, okay? You can add as many other identity providers as you like. For instance, I added Facebook, but you can add whatever you want. By clicking on the Add button, you have to choose the kind of identity provider you want to add. Let's say we want to add another Facebook identity provider, just to make an example. In order to add a Facebook identity provider, you will have to give to ACS some information that will allow ACS to use OAuth in order to authenticate against Facebook and to retrieve user profile information and in order to translate those information into a claims-based identity. Well, those information are the application ID and the application secret, which are available on the Facebook side of the world if you become not a Facebook user, but a Facebook developer. So you will have to go to https://developers.facebook.com. You will have to log in. Come on. Okay, I have to log in with my account. I hope there will not be information embarrassing for me on my own account. But just in case, close your eyes. Okay. And now, under the Apps tab, I have the capability to manage my already created apps or to create a new app from scratch. In order to create an app, I have to provide a name as well as a namespace and a URL that will be used by the app to call the Facebook side of the world. In my scenario, I already have the application ID, which is this one, and the app secret, which I will not show you, just in case, okay? It's a secret, of course. Under the Settings tab, I have the site URL, which means the URL, the referrer URL, from which will come the request to the Facebook side of the world. And this is the URL of my Windows Azure ACS service namespace. Okay? So this will be the URL of Windows Azure ACS, of my dedicated namespace in ACS. So that using this app ID and app secret, I can fill out the form. I can define the field that I want to read from the user profile, from the profile of the user that is going to authenticate himself through Facebook. I can provide a name and an image to better prompt the user with the identity selection page. And I can map my identity provider with the target relying parties, which are the website federated with my custom IPSTS in Windows Azure ACS. I already did all this stuff in my pre-created Facebook identity provider, and here I have all the information. Then I have the relying party section, where I can define all the web application that I want to federate with this identity provider and security token service. Because my SharePoint web application works under HTTP claims sp2013.local, in the SharePoint word, if I want to federate a SharePoint site with ACS, I will have to provide a name, okay, but a realm, which will be the URL of my site plus underscore trust default.aspx. I will have to use the same URL as the return URL that will be used by ACS to redirect the end user browser just after authentication. And very important, I will have to select the token format that will be used to give the digital identity back to the SharePoint side, which is a SAML 1.1 token, which is the one supported by SharePoint, as you can remind from the first slide. I can encrypt or not the token, it's up to you. But in case you want to encrypt it, you will have to select the certificate as well. And on the SharePoint side of the world, you will have to have the public key of that certificate in order to decrypt, the private key in order to decrypt the information. Now you have to define also the token lifetime, which is the number of seconds that you want to keep alive your token, okay? And this should be a reasonable value in order to avoid your end users to go too often to the ACS in order to refresh their authentication token. Lastly, I have a set of rules that I have to define so that as soon as my end users will be authenticated from the external identity provider, ACS will get back some profile information and will put them inside the digital identity describing the user, the SAML token describing the user. Well, inside this SAML token, ACS will place a set of claims based on the information retrieved from the external identity provider. We can automatically generate rules by clicking on this button, or we can manually add rules by ourselves. A rule is just something like that. When the user is authenticating using the Facebook or Microsoft account identity provider, and you get the profile information related to the, let me say, email address, well, what I want to do is translate what I have in the input. If I get this one, then I want to output that one. So you can make a translation rule between what you get from the external identity provider and what you want to give back to the federated website. The generate button usually creates a good set of rules for you. So usually you simply need to click the generate button and you are okay, but you can customize the behavior of the Windows Azure ACS. So now you are almost there, but you have to integrate ACS with your SharePoint site. So you have to go to the application integration page, and there you will find the URL of the Federation metadata XML file. Well, now we will read every single tag of this file. It will take about 20 minutes, but we have time enough, okay? Don't worry. So the first tag is, no, just kidding, okay? No. Inside the XML file, we have an X509 certificate tag. This is one of the most important parts of this XML file because you will have to copy the content of this tag into a Notepad file, and you will have to remove the last part of the story, this one, the closing tag. You can save this file as a myacscert.serv file, which in reality, under the cover, I don't remember where I save it, sorry, ctemp, okay. In reality, this text file is just a certificate file. So go to the myacscert. Here it is. This is an X509 certificate. And you will have to use it and to trust it on the SharePoint side. Moreover, you will have to keep track of the passive requester endpoint, which will be the URL that will be used to authenticate your users. So with these two information, we are almost ready to federate our SharePoint world with ACS. Through PowerShell, you will do that. You will have to reference the PowerShell extensions for SharePoint. You will have to load the X509 certificate you saved before. This is my one, my real one, and not the fake one I saved just a few seconds ago. You will have to trust it from a SharePoint viewpoint, so you will have to create a new SP trusted root authority, giving it a name and a certificate under the cover, so that you will find the certificate inside SharePoint under the security section in the managed trust. Okay, here it is, this one. Moreover, you will have to define a mapping between the claim you will get in the digital identity you will retrieve from the external identity provider and those claims that you want to have inside the SharePoint world, in your claim identity inside SharePoint. So you can define as much as you want claim mapping type using the new SP claim type mapping CMDLet, providing, for instance, which is the incoming claim you want to map, and, of course, what mapping you want to do. So in this case, I want to get the name identifier, and I want to convert it to a local claim type of type username. Or I can simply say that if I get an incoming claim type of type identity provider or email address, I want to keep it same as incoming, so a pass-through rule. Then I have to define the realm, which will be the URL that will be provided to the external identity provider once we want to authenticate, the one defined on the ACS side as well, and the sign-in URL, which is the value we saved from the federation metadata file. And so now we are ready to create the new SP-trusted identity token issuer, providing a name, a description, a realm, the certificate, as well as the claim mapping. Of course, the sign-in URL as well. And we have also to define which will be the claim to use for the identity of, for identifying the identity of our end users, which in my case is the claim number 2, so the email 1, okay? So through these steps, you will have the capability to configure your identity provider in the web application, as I showed you earlier, under the authentication provider page. And this item is the result of all these tasks. Okay? But one last thing I want to show you now, before going back to the slide deck and then again to the demos, is that right now we have configured our environment to support various flavors of authentication, including external identity providers. Well, so far so good, we can say. But let me show you a kind of strange behavior, which is not strange in reality. It makes sense again, but I will show you what kind of sense it makes. We can add a user and add a user policy targeting our web application, all the zones in our web application. And through the people picker control, for instance, we can say that we want to add a rule for the SharePoint / administrator user. If I click on the check button, as you can see, the people picker resolves this user. Of course, we can see. And if I do a rule for, I define a rule for sample admin 01, I can browse through the available results. And for instance, I can say that I want to use the sample admin 01 users retrieved from the forms-based authentication engine. But if I say fake information not existing, and I click on check, as you can see, I still have a bunch of suggestions from the pickle picker suggesting me that this could be any kind of claim value available in the custom IPSTS or in Windows Azure Access Control Services. It's strange and can make confusion in the mind of your end users and in your mind as well, maybe. So let me explain you what's happening under the cover. And then we will solve, we will fix this kind of issue. Well, when you trust an external identity provider, you get back claims, as you know now. But sometimes it is useful to add some more custom claims to the digital identity of your end users and to search for them as well, mainly because you want to give authorization rules based on those claims. Let me say, I want to remind you the fidelity program level claim we had in the first demo. It has a value like bronze, platinum, gold, and so on. Remind? Well, let's say I want to add a specific content that targets only platinum level customers. It would be great to say, I want to define an authorization rule for all my users who have a fidelity program level with a value of platinum. Makes sense. How can we do that? Out of the box, SharePoint uses what is called a claim provider to manage claim values. And to manage claim value, I mean to augment, if needed, claims, or to search, resolve, and find claim values for instance, through the people picker or in any other context. Out of the box, SharePoint has three available claim providers. The first one, SP Active Directory claim provider, is the one used to resolve Windows-based identities. It was the one used to resolve SharePoint / administrator, to make it clear. SP Forms claim provider is the one used for FBA. And again, it can query the FBA database or engine using the membership API and the role API to query it and to retrieve right information and real information. But the SP Trusted Claim Provider, it is available to support any kind of external identity provider. And it cannot be able to query an external identity provider like Facebook, Google, ACS, or whatever else. Okay? So what we have to do in this case is to create a custom claim provider, which will be a .NET type you will have to create, or that your developers will have to create for you. That can sound better. It depends on your role. And the SP claim provider is the base class you have to inherit from, which is available in the microsoft.sharepoint.administration.claims namespace. By overriding and implementing features provided by the base abstract class SP claim provider, you will be able to support claims augmentation, claim resolution, search, and so on. A custom claim provider is available only on-prem, not in Office 365, because it requires a farm-level solution to be deployed, keep in mind. And it leverages a dedicated feature with a dedicated feature receiver in order to deploy the custom claim provider to your farm. And you will have also to run a little piece of PowerShell code to properly configure your web application to support that claim provider. I don't want to show you tons of Linux code, don't worry, but I want to show you a quick overview of how a claim provider is made. So, back to my demo environment, and let me show you that instead of searching for fake information not existing, we can search for something else. For instance, using the browse button. And here I have already configured a custom claim provider in my environment with the fidelity program level claim, which is well defined from a UI perspective, as an available information in the user's profiles. And I can, for instance, search for platinum level customers, which, as you can see, is available in the fidelity program level node of this hierarchy. And I can select it and assign a rule, an authorization rule based on this claim value. In order to provide this kind of experience to our end users, what I have to do is to create a class library project where I will have to create a custom type, a custom .NET type, inheriting from this base class. I will have to define my own custom claim types. In my example, I defined a gender claim type, which in reality is not a claim of my own, a claim type of my own, but is a claim type available out of the box all over the world, as you can see from the claim type value. But I've also defined a favorite color and a fidelity program level, which are custom claim types. This one is a company in which I work, if you were wondering what is this name. Okay. Now, I've defined also a set of values supported by those custom claims. In my demo, those values are just an array of strings, but could be values retrieved from a database or whatever else. It's up to you. And in order to implement a claim provider, you simply have to override a bunch of read-only properties, Boolean properties, to declare what you do. For instance, do you want to support the hierarchy, the one we use to search? Well, we support hierarchy, true, and we support search, true. We support claim resolving, true. And we also support enrichment of or augmentation of identity claims. So we support everything, okay? But this is not enough. Let's say I support entity information. Well, I will have to override a method, which is fieldClaimsForEntity, where I will have to add values for my custom claim for every single user I will authenticate. So let's imagine this kind of film. Your end user authenticates using any of the available identity providers that are configured in my web application. This claim provider is plugged into the security infrastructure of my web application. So as soon as the end users will be authenticated, my digital identity will pass through this custom claim provider, which will be able to augment the digital identity adding custom claims. That's what I do. I add a fidelity program level with a random value, as you can see, just for the sake of simplicity. And I can do the same to fill out the hierarchy, where I simply add the gender node, the favorite color node with an internal name and a description, and the fidelity program level, and so on. In order to deploy this claim provider, I will have to create a farm level solution with a dedicated feature, with a dedicated feature receiver inheriting from this class, in order to configure on the feature activated event my claim provider. So that it is a quick overview, I told you. I don't want to go in every single line of code because this is a session not for developers but for IT pro, but maybe we have a lot of developers as well in the room. And by using a bunch of PowerShell scripting, I can configure my target web application in order to support in its IIS settings the additional claim provider, which is installed in my farm using the previous feature in the farm level solution. All this code will be available as a demo, so you will find all the pieces of code. So don't worry. Now, let's talk about app authentication, which is another story we can say. From an app perspective, authentication, first of all, is supported only for SYSM or REST API request originated by an app. So keep in mind this sentence. Fix this sentence in your mind, okay? App authentication is supported only for SYSM or REST API requests originated by an app. When you want to authenticate apps, you have three authentication models. The first one is the internal app authentication, which is the one used when an app invokes SYSM or REST APIs, providing a SAML token and when the request is within the app website. So if you have a SAML token of the current user and you get a request from the app website for SYSM or REST API, you will handle an internal app authentication, which is the one available for the so-called SharePoint hosted apps or for the cross-domain calls in cloud hosted apps. On the other side, if you have an app that invokes SYSM or REST API, providing not a SAML token, but an access token of OAuth seen by Windows Azure ACS, this is called the external app authentication via OAuth. And the access token can be an access token with both information about the app and the user, or an app-only token. It depends on what you're doing and what your app does. And this is the only model that is supported by Office 365. The third one is the external app authentication via server-to-server, which implies, again, a SYSM or REST API call, but with an access token which is not signed by Windows Azure ACS, but instead using an X509 certificate. And this is the so-called server-to-server scenario on which we will go deeper in a few minutes from now. It leverages a direct trust between SharePoint and the external app based on that X509 certificate, and it is only supported on-premises. You cannot use it in Office 365. So, to show you a flow, to make it more clear, let's imagine that we have to authenticate a request. First of all, SharePoint checks if the request as user credential inside it or not, as a SAML token inside or not. If we have a SAML token, the second check is the endpoint an endpoint outside an app web or not? Well, if it is outside an app web, we have an HTTP or HTTPS request with a SAML token in it outside the endpoint of an app web. So this will be a user request with a user context only. On the contrary, if we have a request with a SAML token targeting an endpoint of an app web, this is the internal authentication, and we will have a context with the app and the user context. But what if we don't have a user, a set of user credentials inside the request? We could have a no-out token. We could. If we don't have a no-out token, this will be an anonymous context. On the contrary, if we have a no-out token, we have to check if the endpoint is a SYSM or REST API endpoint. If it is not a SYSM or REST API endpoint, it is still an anonymous context request. But if we have the target endpoint, which is a SYSM or a REST API, we have also to check if the token has only information about the app or also information about the user. If we have both user and app information, the context will be the app and user context. Otherwise, it will be an app-only request. And all this stuff is based on the OAuth 2.0 specification, which is described in this way in the IETF website. The OAuth 2.0 authorization framework enables a third party application to obtain a limited access to an HTTP service. In SharePoint, it means REST, API, or SYSM. Either on behalf of the resource owner, so a context with the app and the user information in the SharePoint side of the world, by orchestrating an approver interaction between the resource owner and the HTTP service, or by allowing the third party application to obtain access on its own behalf, app only. This is the app-only context. So the overall flow should be this one. You have a subject that wants to start an app. It will ask to SharePoint to start that specific target app. SharePoint will request a context token and will get back from Windows Azure ACS a signed token. We are in Office 365 in this scenario, of course. Then SharePoint will give back to the end user, to the subject consuming the app, an app redirect request in order to redirect the web browser of the end users to the real app server, which will publish the app. And inside the redirect request, we'll inject an SP app token field, which will be typically an input type hidden field inside a form. The app server will use that app token to request a refresh token from ACS, and of course to get it back. So that through that access token, the app server will be able to make a request against the SharePoint environment to retrieve any kind of data that it can retrieve, because there will be an authorization engine, of course, in the middle, and we will talk about it later. And if the app is authorized to get the data requested, it will be also able to give it back to the end user in the browser. The other option we have is the so-called server-to-server or IKE trust scenario, which is a kind of extension of OAuth because it allows to make a direct trust between a SharePoint farm and an external app or service based on an X509 certificate. And it is leveraged, for instance, by infrastructure and service like Workflow Manager, Exchange, and so on, and can use any user identity because it's on charge of the external app in the server-to-server scenario to define the user part of the access token provided and signed and provided to the SharePoint environment. And that's why it's called Ike Trust, which is not full trust. Don't misunderstood this sentence. Ike Trust is different than full trust. It's not the same. The Ike Trust scenario is based on an X509 certificate that usually is for a single app or can eventually be for multiple apps, typically in a dev environment, and it's called a trusted broker in that case, the node with one certificate used for multiple apps. It is available for provided hosted apps, and you need a bunch of PowerShell code to configure it, as well as some kind of support from your development environment, which could be Visual Studio 2012 or 2013. They both give you a good kind of support through a wizard to create a provider hosted app for a server-to-server scenario. In order to configure through PowerShell the SharePoint side of the story in a server-to-server environment, you have to use a PowerShell script like this one. For example, it's not the only option you have, but it's one option you have. First of all, you will have to reference the X509 certificate that will represent the external app. Almost the same code as before. You have to create an X509 certificate 2 instance. Then you will have to define a unique ID which will identify your app in your current tenant. So you will have to create a GUID, which you can create by code or using a page provided by SharePoint. It's the same. A GUID is always a GUID, okay? You have to retrieve a reference to the target web application, website, sorry, and the realm of your target tenant. Then you will have to build up a string which is made by the unique GUID of your app and the unique ID of the realm of the tenant so that you can create an SP trusted security token issuer providing all this information, a name, the certificate, and the identifier. Or you can even use a metadata file that you can provide using the metadata endpoint argument. It's up to you. The second one is easier, but you have to implement the metadata endpoint on the other side. Okay. Then you are ready to register your SP as principal, which will be the principal identifying the app, so that you will be able to set permissions for that app principal. And as you can see, we can set permissions. So it's not a full trust scenario. It's another story, okay? Ike Trust is not full trust. One more time. So, and what about authorization? Well, in SharePoint 2013, we have to talk about users' authorization as well as about apps' authorization. From a user's perspective, we have the SP user and SP group objects in the SharePoint server object model, which are almost the same as they were in 2010. And they both inherit from the SP principal base class. So that if you want to write some code, some custom code, you can manage both users and groups as they were the same thing because they are SP principal. They have in common the same base class. And when you give permission, whether using the UI or using the object model, you can give explicit permissions, that means authorizations, to target SP principals, targeting lists, libraries, single items, size, folders, whatever. Those permissions rely on permission levels, where you have a set of out-of-the-box available permission levels, and you can also create custom permission levels of your own. A permission level is made of a set of permissions, which is a bit mask of permissions based on a fixed and quite long list of permissions you can apply to a specific permission level. And what about apps? From an app perspective, apps are not users, okay? So, apps are granted permissions on an all or nothing basis. So, when you create an app, you have an app manifest file where you can declare the permission requests that are required in order to make your app running properly. And when your end users will try to install the app on their own environment, they will be prompted with the list of permission requests that you declared in the app manifest, and they will be able to grant or not to grant those permissions on an all or nothing basis. If they will grant permissions, the app will be installed. If they will not grant, they will deny those permission requests, the app will be not installed at all. Okay? Of course, as you can imagine, a user can grant only permission that he has. Otherwise, it would be a security issue. And in order to install an app, you have to be at least a site owner. You cannot change a permission assignment that you made. You can only revoke a permission set to an app. But you cannot change it. You cannot add an app, grant it a set of permissions, and then change it just a few minutes later. You can only remove it. And by default, every single app has only full control over its own app web, if any. What I mean is that when you create an app, you can, or you could have, an app web, which is a SharePoint website on which the app relies, which is always available in SharePoint hosted apps, which is the site in which the app runs, and can be available in cloud hosted apps if you want to create it. Well, if you want to create it, or if you have it by default because you are in a SharePoint hosted, your app, you will have full control over this app website. Any other permission has to be requested and declared based on a specific target scope and based on a specific right in that scope. I mean that the scope can be, for instance, the site collection, the website, a list, the tenant, a specific service like the search engine, the managed metadata service, the user profile, and so on, blah, blah, blah. But when you select a scope, that scope will have a specific set of rights that you can configure, you can request in your app manifest. And those rights depend on the scope. So, for instance, you could have the read-only, the write, the manage, and the full control rights for website, list, tenant, set collection, and so on. Or you could have the right to use the search engine when you are defining a permission request with the scope of the search service. Or you can access the user profile information if you want to use the user profile service, and so on. While permission levels are customizable, app permissions, in terms of rights and scopes, are not customizable. Okay? Are predefined. So, let me show you one last demo about how to manage and define authorizations, whether for users or apps. And then we will talk a little bit about the overall picture, let me say. So, back to my demo machine. Let me close the browser. And let me go back to my website with an administrative account. Let me log on using my Windows credentials. Okay, and I'm in. Now, from an SP principle perspective, for instance, under the site settings, you can see that we can define people and groups that will be enabled to access our site, but we can also define permissions. And this is the section on which I want to focus my attention and your attention. Here you can see I have the available groups, the groups defined in my set collection, and a permission level assigned. But I can also define permission for anonymous users in case I enabled the anonymous access. But above all, I can define permission levels. Through this page, I can see the out-of-the-box available permission levels, but I can customize this list, adding my own permission levels, which will have to have a name, my custom permission level, and the bit mask of permissions. These are all the available permissions in the bitmask we have. Let's say I want to create a permission level for viewing items and versions. As you can see, there are dependencies sometimes. So if I want to view version, I have to be able to open items as well, and to view pages, and to open the content. Let's say I want to also customize the web parts infrastructure. And I want to remove or add personal web part to the page. That's it. This is my custom permission level. Click on OK, on Create, and you are done. You will have your custom permission level. And then you will be able, targeting a specific target, to assign this permission level to someone, to an SP principal, so an SP user or an SP group. And what about apps? Well, let's say I want to add an app to this site. Let me go to the site context, and let me click on the Add an App button. Here I can go to the Office Store and search for a specific app. Or I can, I don't know why it is suggesting me the price in Euro, it's OK, but Spain, I don't know why. I'm from Italy, as you can understand from my accent. Maybe Italian and Spanish are almost there, so it thinks I am Spanish, but let me go back and let me add an app that I already have in my environment, just to be faster. This app is the one from Bamboo Solution. It's my favorite one, the Clock and Weather. It's the best app. Well, it's really easy and fast to install because it's small. This app will show me weather information as well as clock information of cities all over the world. As you can see, as soon as I click on the app icon in order to install it, I am prompted with a form that will ask me to grant a set of permissions that are requested by this app. And if I trust it, and only if I trust it, the app will be installed in my environment, in my set collection this time. And in a few seconds, I told you this is fast, so it should be. But in a few more seconds, in no more than 10 minutes, the app will be available. OK, it is. I told you. Now, as you can see, I have this menu that allows me to check the permissions assigned to this app. But I can only check or refresh, let me say, by clicking on the OK button. But I cannot change them. The only option I have is to remove the app if I don't want it anymore, OK? So all this stuff under the cover leverages claims and OAuth, as I told you during the whole session. And if you allow me to do a kind of joke, President Mr. Clinton, Bill Clinton, said on Monday morning, everything is based on human identity. From a SharePoint perspective, to be strict, everything is based on claims identity, OK? So In order to be more clear on this topic, let me invite on stage Sesha Mani, who is the principal program manager in the SharePoint and Office 365 Cloud Services group, who want to talk with us about the roadmap and the future of claims-based identity in SharePoint and in Office 365. Thank you, Sesha.
Thank you, Paulo. It's a great session, right? There's a lot of details here about authentication and authorization in SharePoint 2013. And I want to take a minute just to talk about why claims and why the claims-based identity, like he was alluding to, Bill mentioned human identity, and SharePoint is about claims identity. Why the claims-based identity is so important in SharePoint, and how we see from the product group perspective taking it to the next level, and how much we are investing in this particular area going forward, right? So that way it gives you a big picture. We started in 2010, claims-based approach, right? Then in 2013, we improved it. We made Windows claims as the default. And then going forward, how we are going to think about the same approach, taking it to the next level. So real quick, the claims infrastructure is the core powering across all of our platform investment. The stack of platform investments that are actually powered by the claims infrastructure in SharePoint. It's powering it in, powered it in 2010, today in 2013, in tomorrow in other releases as well, the release we're going to have in 2015 Jeff mentioned in the keynote, and also in the cloud in SharePoint Online as well. So for example, as you can see in this picture, claims infrastructure is at the core, like all the underlying principles that are within SharePoint and in SharePoint Online is based on claims. Take it SAML token that's coming in, or even OAuth token that is coming in, it's all about claims inside the token. And it is being issued by a trusted authority, and then SharePoint can accept those claims. And it basically gives you a much more extensible model to bring in, like Paula was showing, the custom claims you can bring in and make use of that within your SharePoint environment. On top of that, so the whole OAuth and S2S identity platform. So this actually, like I said, that whole platform is dependent on the claims infrastructure itself within SharePoint. And then we saw that app model that is also built on top of the OAuth, the protocol-based, and which is also based on the claims infrastructure itself. Then last but not least, out of the box, we have built S2S, like server-to-server scenarios, which is based on this OAuth and claims infrastructure altogether. How many of you are familiar with server-to-server scenarios that are actually available for you out of the box from SharePoint 2013? Okay, so let me take a minute to just kind of mention and actually introduce you what those scenarios are. On the left-hand side on my side, you can see SharePoint to Exchange. If you install SharePoint 2013 on-prem, I'm talking about all on-prem here, actually. In SharePoint 2013 on-prem, if you install, and you have Exchange 2013 on-prem as well, the scenarios that I have called out on the right-hand side, e-discovery, site mailbox scenario, and the My Site Sync, and the high-resolution photos, those are all powered by the OAuth claims S2S infrastructure. So what you are seeing, what you just saw in Paula's presentation, how this underlying infrastructure is working and how you can make use of it, we actually already have took benefit of that infrastructure and built these scenarios. This is the first level of validation, that it is built on this platform. The second category is SharePoint to SharePoint. Even within SharePoint, if you have two forms that are talking to each other, there are scenarios like translation services. Like, for example, I have a site collection in SharePoint, started with English, but as people uploading documents to it, I want that automatically translated into Japanese in some other site collection so that my colleagues in Japan can actually see that too. So it's an automatic translation that actually happens. Now, that is translation service that actually does the job behind the scene, and it uses the claims-based infrastructure, S2S infrastructure as well. Then the hybrid SAP and hybrid search is the other two scenarios, so going from on-prem, being able to get the search results from the cloud, for example. So those are scenarios within SharePoint to SharePoint, powered by S2S OAuth patterns that you just saw. The other category is SharePoint to MTW, which is the multi-tenant workflow that is available. So you can kick off in the workflows in Azure from your SharePoint system itself. And then, as you saw, SharePoint to the apps is a base app model altogether. So all these like four category of scenarios, which are already built on top of this whole S2S and claims. So claims, we are fully committed in this particular claims identity model. Just want to be clear. That's the only reason why we strongly encourage to get on to the claims-based model and make use of like all the things that Paulo said just now, like, you know, internalize it and see how do you get move forward with it. Now, that's what today's story is. So 2013, all this scenario that I showed there is, again, it's available, and it uses claims and S2S. Going forward, just want to give you a tidbit there, SharePoint to the Azure Media Service. You saw in the Jeff keynote, Video Portal is one of the key investment we are thinking for the SharePoint going forward, right? So that's Video Portal. The videos are getting stored in Azure Media Services, and the way that we actually interact from SharePoint online to the Azure Media Services is based on also the same claims OAuth-based infrastructure. So Azure also supports OAuth-based infrastructure, so we are basically using the same infrastructure to achieve that scenario. And I'm just giving an example that there are multiple other scenarios which we will be, or we are using the claims-based approach itself. So just wanted to share real quick how the roadmap is and why we are doing what we are doing with respect to the claims identity model. And I'll be around. I'm happy to take questions as well after the session, okay?
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome. So to wrap up this session, let me remind you one more time that it's all about claims, as Sasha has told you right now. We could have, in SharePoint 2013, various flavors of authentication, but all based on claims. We could have external identity providers, which could be ACS or Active Directory Federation Services. In the afternoon, we will see one demo based on DFS. We should create custom claim provider to better support our user experience. And in the app authentication field, we have the three flavors of app authentication, the internal one, the external based on OAuth, and the external via server to server. From an authorization perspective, we have the SP principle for authorizing users and groups, and we have the app principle, SP app principle is the class under the cover, in order to authorize apps and to give or to grant permission request to apps. So, that's all for me. I hope you enjoyed this session. I ask you to fill out the evaluation form because we need your feedback. I want to thank you so much for attending, and I hope you enjoyed this session. Thank you.